2, Chapter 5, It's Time to Get Paid, 5 Ways to Profit. Quick turn transactions fall into 5 main categories. 1, rehabbing and retailing. 2, wholesaling. 3, getting the deed subject to the underlying debt. 4, lease options. And 5, options. Almost everything you do in real estate investing business will follow one of these methods. Rehabbing and retailing. Buying houses low and selling them high is called retailing. This is the most easy understood method of investing in real estate because of the countless books and tapes and TV shows on the subject. It's the art of buying at a low price, often doing some repairs and then selling at a higher price and cashing out. A lot of money is made through this method. Some people do it part-time, turning 2 or 3 houses a year, and make more money at it than they make on their regular jobs. Others do it full-time and turn 40 to 80 houses a year with an average profit from $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 and up. In the following chapters, you'll find a plan for locating these basically ugly houses, making offers, estimating repairs, and selling quickly. If you attempt to do this type of deal from a book, I have to caution you, a lot can go wrong, but obviously I can't cover every detail here. Rehabbing and retailing houses is very profitable, but it's also the hardest way to make money in real estate and is layered with costly entanglements. Frankly, it's not where I'd suggest you start your career unless you simply can't control that internal burning desire to make something ugly into something pretty. A lot of satisfaction comes from rehabbing, and there's a lot to learn. However, if you have the choice to make money an easy way or a hard way, my guess is you'd take the easy way. So, I know I would, in fact. And the older I get, the more I want the easier way. But if you can't resist the urge to buy and renovate, here are some common tips not covered in later chapters. Tip 1. Buy in areas where qualified buyers want to live, not war zones, where bullets fly and little white bags float around often and you see them on television, high crime areas. Now, tip 2. Pay close attention to my MAO, Maximum Allowable Offer Formula, in Chapter 7, and buy well below the MAO. If you pay too much for the house, you'll be working for nothing, or worse. Tip 3. Never close your purchase without confirming your assumptions, which are your after-repair value, your repair estimates, and there's a few steps that you need to take before you actually close called due diligence. Do your due diligence and get the purchase appraised as completed. Buy title insurance. Have a termite inspection and get a repair estimate and get a home inspection from qualified contractors, and then get estimates from contractors that are ready, willing, and able to fix the house at that price. Always borrow more than you need to buy and repair. The job will always cost more, take long, and yield less profit than you expect. You better have a cash reserve. Chapter 11 covers where to get the money to buy junkers, even if you're dead broke, bankrupt, and have bad breath and BO and no friends or family and just got released from the federal penitentiary. You do not need credit to borrow money to buy and renovate these properties. Tip number 5, keep a tight leash on contractors. They'll play you like a yo-yo, which can and probably will be one of your biggest learning experiences in the School of Hard Knocks. But hey, don't worry. I graduated from that same school, top of my class, and I survived, and I can help you get through easier. Don't tie up your cash. Tip 6. Tying it up is a good way to become a motivated seller. The greater your need to sell, the longer it'll take. That's Ron's law. Use other people's money, and that will be from private individuals, humans that want to get a higher rate of return safely secured by a piece of real estate. We'll get to that later on. Tip number 7, do a nice renovation job. It'll pay handsome dividends and saved holding costs and then satisfy customers who will send you more buyers. Tip number 8, find a good loan processor or mortgage broker to get your buyers financed. It's the difference between success and failure. This person has your paycheck in his or her control, so make sure the person you find knows his or her own his business and follows up correctly. Today, I list all of my properties that I want to cash out of with real estate agents. I let them do what they do best so I can get out of the way and do what I do best. That way I don't have to deal with any of the process of finding, screening, and getting buyers closed. I'm happy to pay the 6% to get out of the way and let them do it. Tip number 9, master the art of selling houses as fast as humanly possible unless you're going to delegate to an agent. Slow selling is the biggest weakness for most, yet one of the easiest to fix. If you sell houses the way most untrained investors do, it'll be a while before you get paid. Tip number 10, never do your own repairs. If you do, you're working as a laborer, not an investor. You make money by locating, buying good deals, not swinging a paintbrush. If you adhere to tip 4, it won't be a problem. You'll have the money. Some people tell me fixing houses is their therapy. I say if you want to lay hands on a house, you need therapy. Tip number 11, get trained at this craft of quick-turning real estate before you have to pay an ugly price for education. Education is a lot cheaper than ignorance. You should never, ever try to buy and renovate a house and sell it to a qualified buyer unless you have been properly trained by someone who's done many, many houses and can alert you to all of the traps. The last time I quit counting, I had rehabbed well over 1,000 houses. You can get more information on all of my courses at ronlegrand.com, and I even have a three-day seminar just on rehabbing Ron's way and handling contractors and everything that goes with that. Second method is wholesaling. Wholesaling means simply flipping the contract. This is an entire business in itself and generates super profits, usually without ever acquiring the title or the property. It's not uncommon to pick up a check at closing with a seller and a buyer present at the same time. Many times I have earned thousands of dollars within 2 or 3 days of finding a deal. However, today is rare that the buyer and the seller will ever meet in the same room. It's all done electronically. Successful people in the wholesale business are all accomplished at locating good deals and marketing them, primarily to people who are in a rehabbing and retailing business. The first purchaser is willing to take a smaller, fast profit and leave the large profit on the table for the investor who's doing all the work and raising the capital and doing the rehab until it's sold. Some of my students are making a good income by buying and then reselling immediately only once or twice a month. And most of the time they don't even buy, they just flip the contract. These deals require no money, no credit, and no bosses. Believe me, if you locate a deal, someone is waiting to buy it from you and pay you a good premium. Finding bargains for bargain hunters is the easiest, quickest way I know to pick up a check for $5,000 to $20,000. And the whole process shouldn't take more than 15 to 20 days from the beginning to end. In Chapter 6, I'll discuss ways to find these junkers, and Chapter 10 covers selling them quickly. The only difference between wholesaling and retailing is in the exit strategy. Usually it's the same house you're buying. Here's some wholesaling tips not discussed in detail in later chapters. Tip number 1, don't pay too much. Remember, if you're selling to bargain hunters, leave them plenty of room to make a profit or you won't find a buyer. That means that they should net at least 20% of the sales price after all expenses. Tip number 2, if the house is in a war zone, you better be paying war zone prices. Buy them so cheap, you can sell them so cheap, your buyers can't refuse them. The biggest market is landlords looking for low-income tenants. Buy well below the Mayo discussed in Chapter 7. Your only exit is to sell for an all-cash quickly, so make sure your buyers can get the cash and aren't relying on bank financing. Don't allow buyers to learn banks won't finance junkers at your expense. If a buyer can't close in 15 days or less, find another buyer. Use an assignment of contract and let your closing agent collect your fee. See Chapter 10 for the details and the appendix for the assignment. The appendix is only located in the hard copy of the book or the version that you can download from ronsfreebook.com. There's really not that much to learn about wholesaling. It's an easy process. I have students all over North America doing 1 to 10 deals a month and netting a low of $3,000, $4,000. And many make more on one wholesale deal than most people make a year on their job. Getting the deed. The third method of real estate investing involves acquiring ownership of houses by taking over existing debt. The common term used is subject to. You take title subject to the underlying financing. This method does not involve credit because you are not assuming the loan. Title stays in the seller's name but transfers to you. The loan stays in the seller's name, but the title transfers to you. This is the most common technique used by real estate investors today and is literally making millionaires all over the world. The normal exit strategy is to sell for cash to a qualified buyer immediately or to install a lease option tenant buyer until that tenant gets financed at a later date, a topic I cover in Chapter 10. To use the subject to clause requires you to go beyond what you may consider normal or reasonable. There are three issues some people have a hard time coping with, and here they are. Let's get past them and get on with it, because this technique will make you a ton of money. Issue number one: people deed their house to you and the loan stays in their name. Well, you get the house, you get ownership of it, but you will not assume the debt or accept the personal responsibility. Instead, you'll take over the debt, which is called taking the loan subject to. The loan shows on the seller's credit report until it's paid off, and yes, the seller's credit is in your hands. The only kind of seller who will do this is one that needs to sell, not wants to sell. More on this in Chapter 6. The need to sell must outweigh the concern about credit, or you won't get the deal. Some sellers couldn't care less about their credit. It's already shot before they call you. Other sellers have good credit but want debt relief now and simply believe you'll do what you say. There's no written personal guarantee on your part, and you're only obligated morally. You're not obligated legally to make that payment. However, I would expect that if you take over a debt subject to and you promise to make that payment, that you will fulfill that promise. Number two, people give you thousands of dollars in free equity if you let them. Equity is pie-in-the-sky money that doesn't exist until the property is cashed out or retail priced. Debt relief and a long list of other motivating factors compel many people to give away equity in exchange for peace of mind. If you understand this and stop trying to psychoanalyze other people's motives, you can quickly amass millions in free equity that you can turn into cash with a little training. The big mistake you can make is trying to figure out why. Why would people just give you their house and walk away? Well, usually the answer is debt relief. Quit asking why. Start asking when and what. You'll find a lot of people are happy to do so. Number three, the lender can call the loan due because the title transferred without the loans being paid off. There is a thing called a due on sale clause, and it's in all the loans, and it gives the lender the right to call the loan due. That's the bad news. The good news is that lenders hate real estate. It's a plague to them. They're in the money business. Rarely will lenders call a loan due when someone is willing to make the payments, and that's assuming they even learn about it in the first place before it's paid off in the future. But let's play the worst case scenario. If the lender did call it due, that won't affect your credit. You didn't guarantee the debt. No one will be knocking on your door collecting your assets, except for the house, of course, that the loan is on. Your name wouldn't be mentioned in a lawsuit unless you are foolish enough to take title in your own name. More on that in Chapter 13. Will the lenders calling the loan due affect the seller's credit? Yes, it will. That's why I or my students never get a deed subject to without also getting what we call a CYA letter signed by the seller. It's a simple disclosure whereby the seller acknowledges having been made aware that the loan will stay in the seller's name and that the bank could call the loan due. Any sellers who deed you their house will sign a CYA letter. If not, you will not buy the house. Ron's Rule. We'll cover how to buy and sell these extremely profitable and easy to do deals in the next chapters. Try to overcome your objections and apprehensions here and keep an open mind. I have over 500,000 students to date, probably way more than that. We just can't count them anymore. And I'd bet over 60% of them have bought free houses on a subject to basis. Who knows? It might even work for you. I've bought over 400 houses subject to, and not once has a lender called the loan due. And by the way, what a great way to acquire your next residence without guaranteeing debt or putting up a down payment or having anybody pull your credit report. Next segment is lease options, including acts from Chapter 2. The fourth method of investing in real estate is to lease option properties from sellers to control the properties without taking title. This method works on houses in any price range and with any underlying financing. You can reap the big profits without ever owning the house, while at the same time paying no closing costs to buy or sell, doing no repairs, and using very little, unusually no money. The objective is to either sell for cash or install a tenant buyer to lease purchase from you until he or she cashes out, or until you can cash out immediately by getting enough free equity and someone wants to take it to the bank and get a loan. This technique is sometimes referred to as a sandwich lease because you're the meat in the middle of the sandwich. You're leasing it from the seller and you're subleasing it to the tenant buyer. You're collecting the rent from the seller and you're paying rent to the buyer. I'm sorry, that's backwards. You're collecting rent from the buyer and you're paying the rent to the seller. Buying with a lease option overcomes all the objections I just discussed because the title doesn't go from the seller to you until the buyer gets new financing in the future. Therefore, a bank can't call the loan due and the seller's credit is not in your hands. However, you must still get free equity or there's really no reason to get involved in most cases. As I discussed in the Acts chapter, however, sometimes we will lease it for more than it's worth as long as we can get a tenant buyer to give us a down payment, and then we may choose to get out with an assignment of contract or acts. You'll find and sell these deals the same way you do all the others. The only difference is you're leasing instead of buying. Your agreement must give you the right to buy at a fixed price, usually the loan balance, and the right to sublet to a tenant. Of course, my agreement does. You totally control the property during the term you agreed to, and the seller can't reverse the agreement unless you default. It's truly control without ownership. You should only lease option attractive houses ready to be occupied, and the maximum deposit to a seller is $100. In fact, there's really no place on the lease option agreement to give them a deposit, because when you walk out of their home with a lease purchase agreement signed, there is no escrow period, therefore there is no need for a deposit to bind the property during escrow. When you walk out of the house, you control their home if the contract is signed by both parties. If the seller wants more money, probably get the deed or get the door. Honestly, in today's market, it's easy to get the deed, and I'd rather have ownership than control for two main reasons. One, when I get a deed, I never have to contact the seller again for any permission to do anything. I own the house just as legally, moral, and ethically as if I had cash, paid it off the date I met the seller. The seller is in a lease option transaction can always be a problem later after you've solved their problem and they're ready to get cashed out. So if I get the deed, I own the property, I don't have to deal with the seller later. If I don't get the deed, then I am going to have to get the seller to sign a deed at a later date because I lease optioned it from them. I can depreciate a house I own, but I can't depreciate one I lease. On a house I bought for $150,000, the loan amount I took over came in at about $5,000 a year that I get for free through a tax write-off. In other words, the government gives me a tax incentive to own property. They don't give me any incentive to lease property. When people call you to buy their house, they usually want to sell it, not rent it. Buying is a conclusion even after the loan is in their name. Of course, there are times when lease optioning makes sense. Perhaps it's the only way you'll get the deal, so you should be prepared. All it takes is a little training and a couple of agreements to be in business, a multi-million dollar business, I might add, and frankly, we can lease option multi-million dollar houses. I have, and we'll discuss that at a later date, because somebody told me the more dollars you waller in, the more stick to you. Someone also told me I can get a much larger non-refundable option deposit from a tenant buyer on a $1 million house than I can on a $150,000 house. So if I get in with little or none of my own money, that's all mine to keep the day I take it from the tenant. Next is options. Using the options method of investing, you simply agree to option a property at a price A with the intent to sell at price B. You hope that price B is higher than price A. The difference is your profit. This is a risk-free technique that's producing huge paychecks for some of my students. The biggest as of this writing is from a Florida Orlando student who made $2.45 million on one deal in 43 days with an option. He found a wealthy guy who had an $8.6 million house on the market for 4 years with a realtor. It was vacant, and one of five the guy owned at a price he obviously was a pretty cool pad with all the bells and the whistles, including a dock and waterfront. After 3 months of going back and forth, the seller agreed to option the house for $4 million. So much for our previous discussion about getting free equity. This house was a pain to the seller. He didn't want or need it, and the money meant nothing to him. In addition, he had a $5 million yacht parked in the dock. So my student then called an auctioneer to call some in consignment houses and sold some of the stuff in the house and made money off of that the seller wanted to give away. And over 300 of people attended that two-day auction. Now, the house sold for $5.6 million. The yacht sold for $4.3 million, and the stuff inside for almost $1 million. So he netted altogether about $2.4 million on this one deal with no money or credit and no risk and no promises he couldn't keep. I was with him the day he got the wire transfer from the closing. He was a mental wreck all day long until it came, and I can't say as I blame him. From nothing to a millionaire overnight. Actually, options are nothing more than retailing a house for cash. You simply bypass the repair process and remove all the risk. When you think about retailing houses to an owner-occupant, you usually conjure up all the negative things that come with that part of your business. Where do I get the money to buy and fix the house? Well, what if I underestimate the repair costs? Where do I find a good contractor and who'll work for a good price? And what if my contractor stiffs me? And what if I can't sell a house? And how do I make a payment on a vacant house if I'm barely surviving now? Well, I bet you could throw a few more fears in there if you wanted to. In fact, within the next few pages, you'll learn what could be a full-time or part-time business that could easily, and I really mean easily, net you more money than your job does. Not only will you make more money, but we'll eliminate the following negatives while we're at it. One, need money. You won't need any money to do options. Two, need credit. Credit for what? You're not going to be borrowing any money. Number three, repairs scare me. You won't be doing any. Number four, I'm afraid the house won't sell. Well, if it doesn't, you won't lose anything because you don't have anything invested. Number five, well, I don't want anyone mad at me. No one will be mad at you because you've made no promises you can't keep. An option means you may buy. It does not mean you will buy. Next, I can't make payments. Well, good, because you won't have any. Next, I'm afraid I'll lose. Lose what? If you have nothing invested and no promises to break you, how are you going to lose? Next, but I don't know how to sell houses. Well, maybe this would be a good place to learn. Or maybe you could actually use the services of others who already know. They're called realtors. Next, I just don't know. I just don't know, even though I can't lose. I'm scared. Well, better to be scared and moving than afraid and frozen. Let's talk about why you'd want to retail houses in the first place. Actually, there's only one good reason I can think of from my 36 years in the business and retailing about, I don't know, at least 1,000 of them. And when I say retail, I mean all cash to qualified buyers who paid full price and need new financing. I'm not counting all the owner finance deals and our lease option deals or our wholesale deals in the past. The reason I elected to go the retail route on these houses was because the payoff was large enough to make it worth the effort it takes to find a qualified buyer and get that buyer to the closing table. And the profit was big enough. Even in the beginning, that represented a minimum of $10,000 per house, and that was in the early 80s. Now, I just won't retail a house unless it has a minimum of a $50,000 net profit in it. If I lived in a higher price market where the cheapest bread and butter houses started at $200,000, for example, I wouldn't sell it for $50,000. I want a minimum of at least 25% of the sales price as a profit, and the truth is that usually doesn't get me a whole lot excited. Now, before you go off the deep end on me, before I start talking about this 40-50% profit, if you're new, you won't believe it. If you've been around a while and aren't doing the same, you need some fine-tuning. I went back and figured out my last six houses for this book. I was rather shocked myself to find out my average net profit on these six houses was a whopping 33% of the sales price. That's one-third of the sales price in my pocket. I actually bought, repaired, and maintained all six of these houses until they were sold. In the technique I discussed here, you won't buy or maintain or repair. Therefore, I think it's reasonable you would be willing to work for less than 33% because you'll have no money invested or risk at all. Optioning houses eliminates all the risk that comes along with rehabbing and retailing houses. Once you learn the system involved in the business of retailing, I think you'll agree with me that it's a business well worth your time to learn. Once you learn how to do it with options instead of ownership, I think you'll agree it doesn't get much better than that. No risk, no money, no credit, and no way to lose. Of course, some people prefer to actually buy and fix because they just like to make something pretty out of something ugly, and I can understand that. Somebody's got to fix them. But now let's explore an alternative plan. How many houses can you find that fit the following description? 1. Vacant or soon to be. 2. Great neighborhood in any price range. In fact, the higher the better. 3. Owner will sell for, 20, 25, 30% or more below market for all cash. Or next, the house is in excellent condition and ready to occupy. You think maybe there might be a few of these sitting around? Well, I can tell you right now the answer is yes. More than you'll ever be able to handle. So point number one is to spend your time on prime prospects only. A prime prospect is a well-located house in a fast-moving area that's in excellent condition. No projects wanted. No hurdles to overcome, like smelly carpet or poor landscaping or other deferred maintenance. No war zones where qualified people don't want to live, and no trashy neighborhoods. Okay, Ron, I'm waiting to learn what I'm supposed to do with these gorgeous houses and how I make money if I'm not going to buy them. The answer in a word is options. You see that you don't need to own a house to profit from it. Suppose you own a house worth $200,000 and owe $148 to the bank. Well, you work for a large corporation and you just got transferred and out of state, and you're going to leave it in 2 or 3 weeks. Your house payment is $1,285 a month, and you're doing okay as long as that's your only payment. But when you move, making a payment on both houses will be a crippling blow. You're thinking about listing with a realtor, and you see an ad from a real estate investor. I'll buy your house. I buy houses. You call the ad and quickly learn that the only way I can help you is to offer you my lease option program, giving you two choices. First choice is that I'll lease option on your house, making your payments, and eventually sell the home for cash. I'll need an agreed-upon strike price, which is going to be the loan balance, most likely. And when I sell it, it gets paid off. You quickly make me aware that your house is too pretty to allow me to rent it out. You just won't sleep at night knowing a tenant lives in your beautiful home. Okay, or you just will not allow me to take over your house unless your loan is paid off. Okay, I say, well, I understand that, so here's plan two. I'll simply option your house for $148,000, all cash, no terms, no long-term option, and no right to sublease. All I want from you is a key so I can show it and the right for me to buy it or sign my contract to my buyer. I only need a 6-month option. I'll advertise your house at my own expense. I'll think about it every day when I get up and when I go to bed, personally work on it until it's sold and until it's gone or my option expires. And then you can decide if you want to extend it or not. Heck, since you're leaving town, I'll even keep your lawn mowed at my own expense for the whole time. Now, the downside is that because you won't let me sublease the house, I can't make any of the monthly payments while I'm selling your house. Okay, that's your offer. Now, let's go through all the objections a seller could come up with your proposal. Objection 1. Don't you need a license to do this? Your answer is no. Not as long as you have a written option agreement. When the seller signs a contract, you have been given an equitable interest in the house that gives you every right to sell it, especially because your seller has granted that right as well. When you have an equitable interest in a property, in most states, you don't need a license to sell it. You should verify this with your attorney. Well, how large of a deposit will you give me? Well, Mr. Seller, let me ask you this. When you list it with your realtor, how large of a deposit do they give you? None. Of course not. Then why should I? All I'm asking for is the right to buy and a key to show the house. Why do you need a deposit? Question. Well, how long of an option do you want? Well, let's see. How long do you want me to spend my money, my time, and my efforts trying to sell your house for all cash? Frankly, I only need a few months. If I haven't sold it by then, I'm going to move on anyway. All right, this is by no means a full-fledged course on options, but it certainly gets you thinking about it, doesn't it? Let's see what we've accomplished with our make-believe deal. We've taken control of a $200,000 house in good condition with no money or credit, no promises to keep, and no risk. If we sell a house, we make about $50,000. If we don't, we lose nothing except the cost of the ad. which is free today on the internet. We didn't deal with any contractors or rehabbers. No monthly payments to worry about, and no tenants. What's more, the seller decided which plan we used. We didn't. Plan 1, where we leased it with the right to sublease it, or Plan 2, where we didn't. Plan 1, we'd make the payment. Plan 2, we wouldn't. Seller decided we wouldn't. Looks to me like this might be the perfect business. The only downside is that you must know how to retail houses for cash. When you put together a system for doing it, I think you'll agree with me based on this discussion that optioning houses is by far the best way to acquire maximum short-term cash profits. Incidentally, don't get hung up on my $200,000 example. Frankly, I don't want to work on a house that cheap if I'm going to option. You can work in any price range you like. There is no minimum, there's no maximum. But remember, it doesn't take any longer to get a buyer through a system, whether you net $50,000 or $150,000 or more. Be careful not to spend your time walking over the dollars to get to the dimes. If I were you, I'd work on the highest priced houses in your area that are moving quickly. It's common sense. The higher the values, the better chance you have of negotiating a larger profit. That's contrary to those junkers, isn't it? When you actually have to buy the house and pay holding and repair costs, I'd be concerned if you dealt with anything other than the cheaper houses. When you have nothing at risk, you can play for higher stakes. All right, I know I said it in the beginning, you didn't need a cent to do this, and then I talked about advertising. Okay, you need a few bucks. But wouldn't you feel more comfortable if advertising money was all you had to risk? Or would you prefer having to buy a house, come up with a repair money, pay the contractors, pay the property tax, insurance, and utilities, and the maintenance, and get stuck in the house until you didn't, if it didn't sell? Sounds like a no-brainer to me. Options are a lot safer than owning. Besides, if you'll allow your mind to go beyond my $200,000 example for a minute, you realize this will work in million-dollar houses as well, $2 million houses. Wherever you live, there are executive homes worth several hundred thousand dollars more than the seller would accept for a cash sale. Yes, this means you can make $100,000 per house or more. And in fact, I wouldn't option a house that I couldn't net at least $100,000 on. If these numbers scare you, hang around a while. And the longer you're in the Planet Ron, the less they'll scare you, because the more dollars you water in, the more stick to you. What have I got to lose? Well, I promise you, when you get a check in your hands for $100,000, you'll discover options are not only worth your time to learn, but they pay better than any job you swap hours for dollars. If you agree and want to learn, I have a training event called Pretty House Terms, where I cover many of these little-known techniques, and including options, lease options, structuring offers, answering objections, and so forth. And now it's all delivered digitally if you want it, or we can send you the CDs and DVDs. You can get it at 800-567-6128, or you can go to ronlegrand.com and look for the terms system. Pretty houses and ugly houses. The real estate and investing business is actually divided into only two parts, pretty houses and ugly houses. Retailing and wholesaling involve finding houses that need to be rehabbed. They're ugly. Some need more than $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 in work, and others need less, but all need repairs. That's why you can buy them at deeply discounted prices. Lease options, options, and get-to-deed houses are pretty houses needing little or no work. They're in gorgeous areas and in all price ranges, from $75,000 in the low-end areas to $5 million some many places in the country. The focus for ugly houses is to buy them cheap. Price is king. Usually it's an all-cash offer. The focus for pretty houses is to take over debt and get some free equity, or the option to buy, or buy with owner financing. In other words, terms. Because little or no cash is required to buy, you usually get less equity than you do in an all-cash offer on junkers, but it's easy in and easy out because you don't have to raise cash or hire contractors, or sell them for cash. Both types of houses have advantages and disadvantages, and you may have already formed an opinion about what you'd like to do to create big checks in real estate, but don't be too hasty. All of these techniques work, and all should be in your toolbox. We'll discuss each in the book. Some people ask me why they should, what they should look at first, pretty houses or ugly houses, and my answer is always this. Find a seller who needs to sell and help that seller whether the house is pretty or ugly. When you get a check from the closing agent, it won't have a note on it anywhere saying this house was pretty or this house was ugly. It'll say, cash me. I'd like you to learn the whole business, not just a little piece of it, as some do. When you can take whatever comes to you, pretty or ugly, and profit from it, you have become what I call a transaction engineer, and you've joined the elite in our business who truly understand it. You can't find pretty houses without finding ugly ones, and vice versa. Don't go through a whole career as a real estate entrepreneur with blinders on and throw away a dollar for a dime. Spend a little time and money to learn your craft correctly, and you'll need only a few prospects a month to make a fortune. The only other alternative is to learn and work one type of deal and spend all your time looking for a needle in a haystack. Remember, the less I do, the more I make. That starts with recognizing opportunity when it's thrown at you and being savvy enough to grab it and turn loose of all of the junk that'll take all your time and energy and make you no money. Leverage your brain, not your wallet or your credit. Ron LeGrand.